think we have to learn some lessons from it. And so I think the making sure the agency in question or private companies have understandable security policies, make sure they educate their employees about those policies, but also have technology and processes in place to help manage risk. So the fact that this test revealed this problem with users, they often say the user is the weakest link, indicates the educational, the enforcement, and the technology and processes need to be stepped up a little bit to help make sure that folks do the right things, but also they can be more protected when they do the kinds of things that we can expect that they will do wrong.
That's right, because with the USB example, for instance, I mean, it's not automatic. You don't have to have your system set up so that they'll automatically run the software that's on that USB stick, right?
Well, precisely, and I think when you look at a campaign like the National Cybersecurity Alliance, the staysafeonline.org, the Stop, Think, and Connect, we have to have those kinds of processes. We have to educate the employees, but we also have to have systems and processes that make sure that we can reduce the risk. One major agency at one point, as you probably know, had put glue into the USB ports because they were concerned about people doing exactly what was revealed in this test. But as you know, these systems, these enterprises can and should be set up so that only certain thumb drives, only certain kinds of disks will even run on these systems. That can help mitigate the risk of user error or mistake.
So as I said a minute ago, you know, the USB exploit is not new. I think it's the one everybody thinks of when we think about weak links being humans and IT security. So, I mean, are there some more recent examples, more vivid examples we've seen lately of ways that hackers are exploiting human behavior as that weak link?
Well, some of the really sophisticated attacks that we've read about in the paper have involved spear phishing, where you have targeted emails going against employees or contractors of companies or agencies, where the normal protections of antivirus will not see or detect the malicious software that's being introduced via the email. So the lesson to the employees or the contractors of the employees is, you know, you can't open attachments from people you don't know. You can't open attachments from that you're not expecting. And you shouldn't click on links in email unless you're really sure of the provenance and the origin of that. But again, there need to be technologies and processes in place where if people do open that kind of an attachment, they do click on links, there's protection. There can be a virtualized session so that the malware will not get into the enterprise. Those additional layers of protection are really essential for a good defense in depth approach.
Some attacks might not be so obvious, though. For example, you know, here at Federal News Radio, we receive audio files that look like they come from somebody inside the company all the time. It's just the way we do business. But receiving an audio file or a spreadsheet may not be a rare thing for me. So how suspicious as the human element should I be when I receive an attachment?
Well, partly it depends on making sure you have an effective risk management program in place. If you have, let's say, a website that you're trying to protect that is not carrying mission-critical information, you don't have to use the highest standards to protect that. But where you have mission-critical information, you have an enterprise that really has very important data, very important processes that the enterprise relies on, you need to have systems in place that do not allow the malicious software that you may not be expecting to actually infect your systems. Because these sophisticated attacks, as you know, might go into somebody's email. They might steal the addresses like we saw in the Epsilon case. And then they send emails to people who they know the people that are sending the emails. And they might look at the traffic history and see that it's not unexpected that attachments will be sent to that person. So it makes it harder and harder for the user to be able to detect something suspicious in the traffic that may be coming their way. So you need the processes and technologies in place to help reduce the chance, even if something is coming in an email or an attachment from somebody that looks like it's from somebody you know, you can protect yourself against the malicious software infecting your system.
And then it seems to me, too, we can take some other steps as humans to just, you know, in smarter uses of social networking, for example. A lot of us basically give potential attackers a who's who of who our friends are and who we might be expecting email attachments from or important emails from.
Well, that's exactly right. And the federal government, under the Chief Information Officers Council, has tried to write some pretty detailed papers to advise the CIOs and the Chief Information Security Officers of the kinds of measures that are necessary to protect against the risks of social networking. That same CIO Council is studying, I'm told, a white paper on how to protect against spear phishing and some of these technological processes approaches that need to be taken in addition to the awareness measures, things like content filtering, web content filtering, email filtering, mail verification, and moving to use and collection and sharing of greater threat intelligence and behavior-based endpoint malware detection. Some of these additional technologies and processes are really necessary to mitigate the kinds of more sophisticated threats that we see today.